Chapter 6, The Sixth Principle, The Behavior I Focus On Grows. We all want to bring out the best in our children, so why do we feel compelled to harp on their worst? Do we really think that will encourage their best to show up? When we punish, blame, judge, and criticize, we focus on their worst, and then expect those accusations to motivate them to be their best. As parents, it is our responsibility to highlight the qualities we want them to develop and draw out the attributes they may not know they possess. After a child has been yelled at enough, hears that tone of voice enough, feels that anger enough, he will lose faith in himself and develop the qualities we most fear. Our greatest nightmare, what we try so hard to eliminate with punishments and threats, can be actually what we set in motion. What we focus on is what gets our energy. What we put our energy on grows. When much of our energy focuses on the negative, what we get is negative. If we focus on the child as a problem, that problem increases. Most parents put negative attention on the aspects they find most irritating or troubling, assuming the child will want to change. But if a child hears, "What's wrong with you? Why are you so mean? You never listen. You're selfish. You're lazy," he identifies himself with those attributes. But when we focus on our child's capabilities and potential, separate from any problem he may have, problems become more easily managed. When we trust in the child's ability to overcome a problem, that is often what happens. Mindful focus. Placing focus on qualities and attributes is quite different from praising or rewarding behaviors we want. Praise and reward depends on the end product being successful, but mindful focus can encourage even when very little about the child is successful. It requires using all the previous principles to see that our child needs help overcoming obstacles, supported by our faith in a positive outcome. Beneath the obstacle lies the child's desire to be successful, and often hidden from recognition are the qualities and the potential to reach that goal. If we shine our light on those qualities, especially the ones our child has lost sight of, those qualities will grow. Dr. Edward Hallowell, child and adult psychiatrist and author of many books, including Driven to Distraction, believes that every child is born with talents and passions that can remain hidden if not discovered and encouraged by the important adults in their lives. Especially when criticized, they can be left feeling stupid. They can languish for the rest of their lives, never knowing they had talents and passions that could, when nurtured and guided, lead them to fulfilled and happy lives. In a given day, which of your child's behaviors do you tend to notice or pay attention to? Which behaviors grab your energy? Which ones does your child see you watching the most? Rest assured, those are the behaviors that your child will use when he wants your attention. It doesn't matter to him that the attention is negative. Those are the behaviors that will grow. A child climbing in a tree is yelled at, "Get down right now! You're going to fall and hurt yourself." The intention is to protect the child from falling, but the parent's fear and anger at the child for climbing the tree sends the child the message that he's not capable of climbing well. The parent highlights the danger he's in. If he listens, he will lose confidence and be more likely to fall. Remember the gap? Children listen to what they hear, and they hear the message they perceive, not the intention behind what is said. It can actually be a good thing when children turn parent deaf. If, on the other hand, the child up the tree is talked down with clear instructions on where to put his feet, the focus is on what he can do and what he is already in the process of doing. He's more likely to get down safely, confidence intact. The child learns an excellent lesson in climbing. Talking about the dangers can wait until he's down and safe. Children need to be guided through a process, not pressured to reach a result. It's the journey, the learning process, difficult or not, that is important. When we mindfully focus, we see that process and give them energy to blossom and grow on their own terms, not on ours. Rewards and praise are intended to pull our children in our direction, to get them to do what we want. Mindful focus means we see who the child is and encourage a stronger foundation of self-esteem and self-confidence. Focus on the positive within the problem. If you're worried that your child is afraid to try new things and lacks self-confidence, find the time that she's asserting herself. For instance, if she reacts strongly about something, "Mom, I'm not going to try out for basketball. I don't care how much you want me to. I don't want to." Irritating as it may be, try, "Well, you certainly know your mind. No one's going to be pushing you around anytime soon. As much as I don't like the waste of the registration money, I must say I admire your certainty." By complaining, "Why won't you ever try anything new? You're never going to get anywhere this way," you are undermining the quality you want her to develop. You're setting her up to fail. At that moment, she has no choice but to focus on how incapable she is and what a disappointment she is to you. If her temperament makes it hard for her to take risks, she's more likely to take a few if she feels understood by a parent who says, "It's hard sometimes to move into new territory. You like to check things out and not rush into anything. It's a good thing. Your impulses will never get the better of you." If your child seems unable to stand up for himself or assert himself with others, you may fear he will always be bullied. When he's fighting with a sibling, try something like, "Boy, you got really mad about that. I can see how important that game is to you. You wanted your turn on the computer and you really asserted yourself. Do you think there's a better way of getting your sister to acknowledge what you want?" Or, let's say he also gives in to his more demanding sister and you worry he'll always take the easy way out. Next time he gives over something she wants, it could be a nurturing temperament and has nothing to do with being intimidated, try, "You're so accommodating to others. It seems like harmony is really important to you. Don't you wish the world was run by more people like that?" Another time, you can question whether he feels okay about letting her have what she wants or whether it's a problem for him. You can turn difficult situations into positive learning experiences depending on your perception of the situation. It will feel awkward at first, but once you understand the principle behind the words, you will see that you're giving your child the support he needs. Perhaps the root of his inappropriate behavior will be addressed when you focus on the aspect of his character he himself fears he's lacking. Perhaps your child is way too aggressive for your peace of mind, and you catastrophize that the amount of hitting, shoving, and pushing he does will soon leave him without friends. Catch him being gentle. Instead of being obvious and praising normally expected behavior, good for you for being gentle. Go for the subtlety he may be more able to hear. Look at how Pockets rolls over and actually smiles when you stroke her belly so gently like that. See how her lips turn up? That is so cute. That must feel so good to her. Our children need our encouragement and our belief in them, especially when they're showing troubling behavior. When it's hard to find those moments of competence, it's easy to criticize and blame. We amazingly think our negative comments will teach them to shape up. But when the good moments, even when few and far between, are watered and fertilized, competence will grow. Islands of Competency. Dr. Robert Brooks, author of many books, including Raising a Self-Disciplined Child, and a faculty member of Harvard Medical School, encourages parents to find a child's, quote, island of competency, end quote. In his extensive work on resiliency and encouragement, Dr. Brooks has learned that no matter how far off track a child has gotten, there is at least one small area in which competency can be found and supported. Like a diamond in the rough, it will sparkle when we shine light on it. It means playing detective, and it requires, for most of us, going against the tide of popular opinion. Punishment is what is traditionally called for when behavior is unmanageable. But punishment is the worst possible antidote. It reinforces the child's belief in his incompetency. We must reach deep inside to find each child's island and pull it out so he can see it reflected in our eyes, one of the most difficult things to do in the face of behavior that can make you scream. First, remember, children want to be successful, and fear is an obstacle that fuels negative behavior. Perhaps this child feels hopeless compared to more successful peers or siblings, has taken in messages from parents or teachers that he isn't good enough, or has been labeled as the problem in school. The obstacle could be huge. Second, Understand that your child is not his problem or his obstacle. See them separately. His problem, hopelessness, grief, defeat, anger, is the obstacle that has developed in his life for whatever reason. A sense of defeat comes upon a child forced into an environment in which he feels incompetent. That internal state may exhibit as boredom, disdain, disinterest, or disrespect. But those defensive behaviors are rooted in the problem of defeat, not in the child. When the parent can see the child separate from the problem, he may be able to find himself. Third, there needs to be a belief in the child's unique competency. Perhaps school does not engage him. It doesn't mean he's not competent. It means that so far school has not caught his interest and he has no motivation to do the work required. Finding his island of competency, whether it's horseback riding, skiing, history, computers, dancing, will boost his self-esteem and encourage your hope in his future. Rewards and prizes versus mindful focus. We want our children to cooperate with us and be successful at whatever they do. When something does not come easily, motivation is key. Psychologists and human behavior specialists look at two main categories of motivation, intrinsic and extrinsic. In other words, motivation that comes from within and motivation that comes from without. All the behavioral techniques, the rewards and punishments we use to get children to do what we want, are extrinsic, outside manipulations and tactics to make that dangling carrot work. Whether it's the reward of the gold star, the praise of you make mommy happy, money for good grades, computer privileges, or banishment to one's room, timeout, threats of getting in trouble, or revoking computer privileges, outside motivation techniques only work as long as the external factor is present, that is, the authority figure who holds the carrot or the stick. Children who are kept in line by the hope of reward or the fear of punishment tend to flounder when the carrot or the stick isn't around. Then parents think they cannot trust the child to behave appropriately without rewards and punishments to keep him in check. These methods never encourage a child to behave appropriately because it feels right inside. The child never develops intrinsic motivation because he's too focused on what's going to happen to him or what he's going to get. Alex's elementary school uses a reward system that gives children gotcha stickers for being kind or responsible without being asked. The sticker shows a big thumbs up and earns eligibility in a lottery drawing for a prize at the end of each week. At the end of snack time in Alex's class, his teacher asks the children to clean off their desks to be ready to move on to the next activity. Tyler, who had the desk next to Alex, had gone to the bathroom, and Alex decided to clean off his desk for him. When Alex's mother picked him up that afternoon, he was grumpy and combative. After asking him what the problem was, he finally complained, "I cleaned off Tyler's desk without being asked and didn't get a gotcha." It was clear to Alex's mother that Alex was after the sticker, not the reward of knowing he had helped out his friend. Chances are that Alex either won't bother next time or else will make himself much more obvious. In order to focus on what she wants to grow, Alex's mother would do well to point out the generosity Alex showed in helping his friend. She must start out by validating his disappointment because that is where he is at the moment. Then she could suggest how good Alex must have felt inside, knowing he'd helped his friend, and ask how he would have felt if he had been Tyler returning to find his desk cleaned off. Talking about whether or not Tyler thanked him could generate a conversation about how we feel when our help is ignored or appreciated. These comments might shift Alex's focus off the sticker to his kind deed. When motivation comes from within, the child associates certain behavior with feeling right inside, achieving a state of emotional balance, success. Intrinsic learning means the child learns for the sake of learning, as an end in itself, rather than as a means to an end or a reward. Goals set and earned are intrinsic rewards for the person who sets the intention and accomplishes what he wants. They are motivators to set further intentions. But when the goal is set extrinsically, motivation ends when the reward is either won or lost. We assume that once the child matures, the external motivators of rewards and punishments will have trained the child to behave properly. There are two fallacies with this thinking. First, children are not rats in a maze. They have minds of their own and personalities in all shapes and sizes that often resist, test, or fight the authority figure when they feel trapped, coerced, or manipulated. And second, research has shown that extrinsic learning goes no farther than what is perceived necessary to achieve the reward. In his book, Unconditional Parenting, Moving from Rewards and Punishments to Love and Reason, Alfie Cohn cites studies that show, quote, extrinsic motivation is likely to erode intrinsic motivation. The more that people are rewarded for doing something, the more likely they are to lose interest in whatever they had to do to get the reward, end quote. No reward in the world can give a child a desire to cooperate and help others, a love of learning, a passion for whatever moves her. How many reward systems have actually dampened a child's potential because she never pushed herself past the reward of the gold star or the A? How many children who achieve an A with no effort work twice as hard because they love learning? How many children who know there is a pizza waiting for the reader of the most books or pages are going to choose Huckleberry Finn over lots of short, easy reads? If computer privileges are systematically removed for bad behavior, then the child is going to hoard her computer time, fearing that at any minute it could be taken away. External motivation can actually foster complacency, laziness, boredom, and lack of cooperation or interest, Cohn says. The external motivator loses its value after a while, and the child will up the ante if he's used to being rewarded for normally expected behavior. Sure, I'll take the trash out if you give me a dollar. Wendy confided in me that her 11-year-old son, Christopher, said to her that it was clear he wasn't wanted in this family. Instead of rolling her eyes or saying, "That's ridiculous," Wendy looked at Christopher seriously. "Every time Dad walks in a room, he gives me a direction or orders me to do something. Half the time you do it, too. I even lost swimming privileges for not hanging up my towel, which was an accident. There are consequences for even the most trivial accidental things." Wendy realized that she and her husband had been overly focused on what Christopher was doing wrong without even realizing it. They were missing him, and things were starting to go downhill with their 6-year-old Patrick as well. We talked about shifting focus to the roots Christopher had so eloquently exposed. The patterns of yelling and punishment needed to change for both boys. 2 weeks later, Wendy told me, "Already the thinking has changed in our home. Both my husband and I are trying to deal with what's going on underneath the behavior rather than just the behavior. It really helps. We've had a couple of really shining moments and more clarity than we've had in a long time." She shared this story. Their year-old puppy had been a serious behavioral problem and a target for jealousy between the boys. Her potentially dangerous biting behavior had meant that Patrick was not allowed to pick her up, so Christopher was more involved in the training process. One evening, while Chris was doing some training with the dog, Patrick deliberately lured her away with food. Chris yelled at Patrick, and things escalated until Patrick got hit and started screaming. Normally, Wendy would have yelled at them and sent them both to their rooms. This time, she changed her focus. "I abandoned dinner preparations and tried to focus on their feelings. Suddenly, it became perfectly clear to me. I said, 'Patrick, you must be feeling jealous that Chris gets to do more with Rosie than you do. He can pick her up and cuddle her on his lap, and he gets to do most of her training.' Well, Patrick said yes in a way that broke my heart, and I could see the light bulb go off in Chris's head. His whole body, voice, everything changed. We all got it. Then I told Patrick how I had noticed that Rosie was getting more comfortable with him because he had been so gentle with her, and I reminded them about how much Rosie's behavior had changed in a year thanks to Christopher's impressive training. Two birds with one stone. From then on, they've worked out a way for Patrick to be Rosie's aide while Chris continues his training. The best thing is that Rosie's loving it." Gold stars and other unintended punishments. Sticker charts can be used to stop a habit the child wants to break. When it is in black and white or shiny colors, the child can see that he is indeed capable of changing the behavior he is motivated to change. For example, a 4-year-old who desperately wants to wake up in a dry bed, a 7-year-old who wants to stop pulling her hair out, a 10-year-old who wants to see that she actually is accomplishing goals at piano. They don't work for long when the stickers are given for behavior the parent wants to see. Prizes at the end of a good week lose their charm after a while. Children whose parents give out check marks and smiley faces to induce behavior they want typically feel angry, frustrated, or hopeless when they get a check minus or a frowny face. Rewards are dependent on approved behavior, on a product accomplished, so no reward is like a punishment. In classrooms, it's always the same children who get the rewards. The ones who never do get consistent negative reinforcement that they're not as good and they give up trying early on. And awards given to every child in a class or on a team soon become meaningless when children see through the attempts at dishing out self-esteem. Praise is overrated. Self-esteem was the parenting buzzword of the 80s. High self-esteem is a wonderful goal, but it becomes undermined when we misunderstand how to accomplish it. When we praise to the hilt, thinking we're increasing our children's self-esteem, it backfires. We are now experiencing an epidemic of entitled 20-somethings, many of whom require so much praise in the workplace that companies are hiring praise consultants. Like rewards, praise can undermine initiative. Conversely, praise feels condescending to a child when it accompanies something the child does not feel proud of. And many children become suspicious of praise when it feels manipulative. A father came to see me concerned about his son's lack of self-esteem. He explained that his son was mad about a paper he'd written for school, and he threw it on the table, saying, "It sucks." His father picked it up, quickly looked it over, and said, "What's wrong with it? I think it's great." His son stormed upstairs and slammed his door. I suggested that his son was not suffering from low self-esteem, but frustration at a father who doesn't have a clue, as his son put it. I added that he would have been more helpful to his son if he had acknowledged his feelings instead of denying his point of view. "I guess this didn't come out the way you'd hoped. Can you tell me what it is you don't like, since I don't see it?" A creative parent could put mindful focus on what he would like to see grow in this child with, "You have such high standards for yourself that it's hard for you to let anything slide by. That's going to serve you well in your work, although it makes you pretty hard on yourself." When praise is useful, it is specific and descriptive. Instead of "good job" or "you're such a good girl," pay attention to what it is you like. "I really appreciate it when you bring your dish to the sink." "It was kind of you to offer your sister a push on the swing." But stay away from praising normally expected behavior, like "good for you for coming when I called you," or you'll have a child who expects praise for everything. "Aren't I a good boy? I just had a poop." The problem with blame. Whenever we place blame, we leave our children with no other option than to be defensive. "But he hit me first. She made me do it. You never let me do anything I want." Blame is like a blanket condemnation, and for that moment anyway, there's nothing left to grow that's positive. Laying blame is like watering shame and self-deprecation. "I'm stupid. I can't do anything right. I should just kill myself," are phrases parents hear from children who feel blamed. "You're stupid. He's such a jerk. She's lying," come from children who are deflecting blame and projecting it elsewhere. There's no opportunity for the blamed to take in what happened before hiding behind a wall of defense. The child has to blame back, deny his actions, possibly with a lie, justify his actions with anything he can come up with, or suck it up and retaliate later on the one he perceived got him in trouble. Blame does not hold anyone accountable. It merely creates feelings of fear and anger. Even the child's name called with that tone feels like blame. Imagine living in your child's head. Can you guess how much of the time she's afraid of getting in trouble or feeling blamed for something? And, of course, the more she's blamed, the more trouble she gets in, because the blame only expands the obstacle in her way of successful behavior. Life inside the box. It's not always easy to find those islands of competence or unique qualities to admire, especially when the negative behavior is all you can see. Parenting a strong-willed child can get oppressive when there seems to be no let-up to the demands. You feel boxed in. Clarity and objectivity are a dim memory. When emotions are high and solutions feel out of reach, your child's point of view is the last thing you care about. Within that tight space, your assumptions seem like the truth with a capital T. Carol's 3.5-year-old does not like to stay in her car seat. Sadie will often unhook her car seat belt and climb into the way back with her brother. The last time this happened, Carol stopped the car and went around to her daughter, who was balancing on the back of the seat. Carol yelled, "You get back in this seat and buckle your belt. Why do you keep doing this?" As Sadie was climbing back, she yelled, "I don't want to sit here." Carol pointed her finger very near Sadie's face and said, "You will sit in this seat because I told you to." Then Sadie slapped her mother's face. Carol saw red. She was not about to look for any roots. She grabbed Sadie's little arm and squeezed it. Her face was not pretty. She needed to get away from Sadie so she could think. Time is important. Take all the time you need. I asked Carol what she ultimately wanted for Sadie. She said for her to do what I tell her and not to feel like she won't listen to me. Carol's priority is off. She is stuck in her box with her own agenda. Outside the box, she would objectively be able to see that she wanted Sadie to be safe and to take responsibility for herself by staying buckled up, a more worthwhile goal than getting her to obey. Outside the box, Carol can focus on what she wants to grow by appealing to Sadie's sense of logic and pride. I suggested that Carol find a time when both she and Sadie are in a good place and not during or just after a car ride or a slap in the face. Carol would then raise the issue of the unpleasant times they've had in the car. In order to connect, she would need to start by acknowledging that being strapped in a car seat is no fun for Sadie, who wishes she could be in the back with her brother. By acknowledging Sadie's agenda first, Carol can more realistically expect her to listen. Sadie is at the height of egocentricity. If Carol tells her what to do and expects her to do it, she will turn out or resist. Hence the slap. Inappropriate behavior, but understandable given the fun she was having, her persistent temperament, and egocentric stage of development, together with the angry, blaming finger coming at her. The slap was Carol's signal that Sadie felt little, powerless, angry, and misunderstood. Appealing to your child's sense of logic. This is where the art of parenting comes in. After connection has been made, Carol can nurture Sadie's better qualities with, "I'm not sure you're old enough, but I do know you're smart enough to understand why it's important for you to be in the car seat. Do you think you're up for learning about it?" This little challenge will likely appeal to Sadie, as 3-year-olds are hungry for information about how things work and why. I suggested that Carol demonstrate with a toy car and toy people what happens when the toy car hits something hard. Then, instead of telling her, ask Sadie what she thinks happened to the people. Do you think they might be hurt? How? What do they need to do now? Who can help them best? Involving Sadie in the drama will help her better understand how the car seat protects her. Telling a toddler that she has to stay strapped in or she could get hurt makes little sense. Handing over responsibility. Now the magic step, giving Sadie responsibility for herself by focusing on her capabilities. When we tell children what to do, when, and how to do it, the message we send is, "You have to do what I say because you don't know any better." Even if that is true, children like Sadie don't like to hear it. Sadie's desire is not to be defiant. She did not slap her mother because she has no respect for her. She slapped her because she was so mad at being coerced and having a finger pointed in her face that her impulses took over. She's perfectly willing and able to cooperate when she's treated with the respect she is demanding, the same respect Carol wants. Just because she's little doesn't mean she doesn't need respect. Carol can then say to Sadie, "You have a responsibility to take care of your body and keep it healthy and safe. It is your body, not mine, not Daddy's, not your brother's." Sometimes, in order for us to take care of ourselves, we have to do things we don't like. I have to wear a seatbelt, too. And sitting in a car seat is one way you can do that. I will always be there to remind you when you forget, because it's my job to make sure you're safe. If you forget, I will stop the car and say, "Remember to take care of your body, Sadie. Can we agree on that?" Carol would then be putting her priorities in order, focusing mindfully on just what she wants to grow in Sadie and teaching her a very important lesson, all in a way that will encourage Sadie to rise to the challenge. Main ideas from Chapter 6. Focus on negative behavior promotes negative behavior. Focus on capabilities, even potential capabilities, promotes them. Mindful focus is unlike praise or rewards. It can build positive capabilities even in the midst of negative behavior. Your child has at least one island of competence. To influence your child's behavior, focus on and trust the child's unique competency rather than wrongdoing. Motivators are either intrinsic or extrinsic. Extrinsic rewards motivate no further than the win or loss of the reward. Intrinsic rewards keep motivating. Rewards become punishments to the child who doesn't get them. Praise is overrated and can undermine a child's initiative. Feeling appreciated builds initiative. Normally expected behavior should not be praised. Blame and accusation build walls of defense. Defensive behavior is the only option. Telling children what to do puts focus on their inability. Asking them what could be done builds competence. Practice. The next time your child does something inappropriate, jot down a few notes about what happened to remind yourself of the incident. When you have time, think about what positive character aspect of your child was evident. Even if her behavior was inappropriate, what about the energy behind the behavior could you focus on and validate? For example, her determination, strong mind, knowledge of what she wants, sticking up for herself or a friend. When emotions are cool, reconnect with her and let her know that even though you didn't like her behavior, you saw an aspect of her character that you admire. Then ask her how she could use that quality with a different choice of behavior. Make a list of your child's islands of competence. Perhaps it's longer than you think. Then find times to point out specifics to your child that he might not think are true of him, such as, "I noticed how carefully you carried that Lego unit you built. You didn't drop one piece." List aspects of your child that you have concerns about, such as lack of enthusiasm, aggressiveness toward others. Then look for times when you see the opposite and can point out what you want to grow. "You seemed so energized about that phone call. It must have been something that got your juices going. You really put your energy behind your words more than your hands today with your brother. Words can be very powerful, can't they?"